Every Thursday night, you ask the questions, DT gives you his answers. No holds barred.
It's Q&A with Don Tony. This is your chance to speak your mind and be heard about anything.
Q&A with Don Tony. And now, your host, Don Tony.
All right, good day, everybody. It is May 2nd, 2023. It was funny, I was thinking about it earlier. May 2nd, why does that date sound so familiar for yours truly? It was this day 24 years ago that I fucking got married. May 2nd, 1999, got it annulled 6 months later. Best decision I ever did in my whole life. How's everybody doing? Now, this is going to be a little bit of a treat, I think, for not only our Patreon family, not only for our YouTube channel members, but for everybody as a whole. Now, why am I saying this? Well, I do a Q&A episode online. It's usually like once a month. People send in questions in advance. Every week we do a Patreon show. Lately, now we're mixing it up with Kevin Castle and I, now doing some shows here and there again for, you know, specific themes. And today was the day that I was going to officially record the latest Q&A and do the Patreon live show. Now, what I did this time around is I had the Q&A opened exclusively for our YouTube channel members because, hey, you know, they, along with our Patreon family, are the reason, more than anything financially, why these shows continue. I think you have all realized, especially with yours truly and Kevin Castle doing some shows again, that podcasting in 2023 is extremely, extremely cutthroat. People will put everything they possibly can, you know, just to grab a few cents. And I've noticed that, I've seen it. And, yeah, you have to adjust accordingly. And, you know, even when I do video shows, I love doing them. But at the same time, though, this is not 2003 where you could just dump loads of money into shows and spend. And plus, I'm not a single guy anymore either. You dump crazy amounts of time and crazy amounts of money into shows. And, you know, when you see that a lot of people are still enjoying your stuff, but you're not their first choice because there's people out there with the clickbait and the catchy wording that everybody's got to check that out before yours. I'm like, why am I staying up till 3 o'clock in the morning? Why am I investing all this extra money? Why am I putting stuff on plastic? Why am I doing it? So, you know, you try to create a balance. And the good thing is, since I've been doing this since 1997, I know how to acclimate, and I have done so. And today's episode is kind of like a little bit of a combination of that. I'm doing the Q&A tonight. I'm doing Patreon tonight, but I've decided to bundle the two shows together. Now, what's cool about it is our Patreon family, their questions, their topics, their concerns will be at the top of the show, followed by the Q&A. For our YouTube channel members and for everybody online, their questions will be at the top of this show, followed by Patreon. And, you know, we'll see how it goes from here. Now, Wednesday night Dynamite, as of right now, if I still do the episode tomorrow, it's going to be an audio-only show. And I know some people, you know, on the video side of things are not thrilled that I am dedicating more time to audio only shows. But like I said, at the end of the day, you know, one thing about audio, one thing about doing audio only shows that puts it superior to video, let's be honest, is that it's very, very hard to clickbait with thumbnails when you do a full-blown audio only podcast. You know, when you do video, anything to get yours to pop up on an algorithm. With audio, there's really no algorithm. You're listed based on your popularity and your stats. No clickbait. I mean, obviously, you click on a show because the title might be a little catchy, but you don't have any algorithm that could be manipulated, teased, you know, fondled with just to get yourself a little bit extra exposure. So, that's what we're going to do. So today's show is actually going to be a combo. It's like going to the drive-thru. Why get a hamburger and a fries separately when you could get a combo and get a free drink out of it as well? So NXT tonight, I have watched little drips and drabs of it. Yeah, Scripps being revealed as Reggie. That was something that we talked about a while ago, that WWE was changing the script with Scripps. It just never took off. I'll be honest with you, I don't like the idea of a masked wrestler unmasking another wrestler. I don't care if the masked wrestler is Reggie and Axiom feels offended. Axiom was a kid. You know what I mean? So, you know, the mask is supposed to be a little bit, you know, it's supposed to have a lot of, you know, history behind it. It's supposed to have a lot of meaning. It's supposed to, you know, represent, it's supposed to have some weight to it. You know, it's not just a prop. And I don't know. For me, I just don't like seeing a masked wrestler unmask another wrestler. Unless the match is mask versus mask. You ask yourself, why didn't they do that? Guys, why didn't NXT advertise next week Axiom versus Scripps, mask versus mask? Why not? I don't know why they didn't think about doing that. But the bottom line is that Reggie has been revealed once again. Reggie's gimmick will change. Hey, who knows? Maybe Reggie will be revealed as the person in the parking lot beating up all the women. Is there any WWE writer that might get offended? Are they going to accuse racism? I don't know about that, guys. But also, Indy Hartwell. Remember last week when I talked about her injury? I said that in all intents and purposes, she escaped serious injury. But WWE had her get an MRI anyway to play it safe. And guess what? The MRI revealed an injury. So not only is she drafted to the main roster, but she is relinquishing the NXT championship and is going to be a tournament starting next week. You know, the idea of Indy Hartwell was, listen, you know, I don't know if anybody has kind of figured it out, but Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn are still the women's tag champs, and Indy Hartwell would have still been the NXT women's champion. And the idea was is that Indy Hartwell's not going to get a hell of a lot of TV time on the main roster in the ring. Maybe for main events, maybe for dark matches, but she's not going to get weekly airtime inside that ring. Neither is Alba Fyre and Isla Dawn on SmackDown. So the idea was that they were going to work extra time. They were going to still do a little bit of work in NXT, and they would still work the main roster. And as they do that, they get acclimated. You know, you're going from one extreme to another. You know, keep in mind, Alba Fyre, Isla Dawn, and Indy Hartwell, you know, they're not like maybe like a wrestler. It's not like an Apollo Crews or Jinder Mahal or a Mandy Rose who have been acclimated and performed on the main roster. And maybe they're back to try to season, improve, and get back onto the main roster. These are young stars that are not used to it. So the idea was that they were going to get extra work in. Look at Jade Cargill. Jade Cargill, I was watching a little bit of, really listening to a little bit of Jim Cornette earlier. And they were talking about Jade Cargill and Taya Valkyrie's match. And we'll get to the Q&A in a minute because that's what this show is about tonight. It's Q&A and it's Patreon. I was listening to them talk about Jade Cargill versus Taya Valkyrie. And one thing that really, you know, caught my attention is that Jade Cargill's been in AEW for over 3 years, and she's had 55 matches. You divide that into years, that is not enough matches for somebody getting into the business and, you know, really honing your craft. And after 3-plus years, she really cannot. We've talked about it before, and it's not a knock. It's not a knock on Jade Cargill at all, but you would think after 3 years, she would have been much further in. Who knows? Maybe her private life, maybe her family life, maybe her career, she prefers to be technically a part-timer. But you see after 3-plus years that there's still a crazy amount of work to do. You're not going to see that when it comes to NXT. Anybody getting graduated to the main roster. I mean, my God, you look at somebody like Tiffany Stratton, and it's not fair to compare Tiffany Stratton to Jade Cargill, but look at where she has progressed in 1 year. Look how many matches she has had. Having 16 to 20 matches a year, it's not going to cut it. Not for somebody who is just, maybe for a veteran who's winding down their career, but not somebody who is breaking in and in such a high, you know, position of power. So, all right. There was something else I wanted to talk about before we start everything. Actually, you know what? We can start questions because one of them actually has to do with news today. I do remember what I was going to say. I am guilty of tweeting and deleting something earlier today. I tweeted and deleted on Twitter. And today was kind of like a re-wake-up call for yours truly. And it has to do with AEW's tickets going on sale for All In. And I want to shout out Ronnie for a great question. Came in late. Very, very lucky that I caught, you know, checked for last-minute questions before I went live. He wants my thoughts on AEW selling 35,000 tickets on the first day for All In. And Tony Khan's Twitter war today with ESPN's Michael Coppinger. Okay. First of all, I am thrilled to see AEW sell that many tickets. I don't care if people want to say, oh, it was a lot of scalpers. Oh, it was this. Whatever the reason you want to cut, they sold 35,000 tickets. And for AEW, that is fucking great. We just talked about it on Monday night about Paris, France. Paris, France, you know, I take pride on New York having rabid fans. Philadelphia, which I apologize to my Philly friends out there. I had a conversation tonight with somebody who used to work in ECW. We were actually DMing each other for about 45 minutes tonight. That person is the one that convinced me to delete a tweet that I put up earlier, and I'll explain why in a few moments. It has to do with the AEW stuff. But somebody really got, you know, into me last night, and I was checking emails and DMs and a little reaction online this morning, like, oh, you talked about Chicago fans, you talked about New York fans, you talked about, what about Philly? And I'm like, holy shit, how could you leave out Philly? I mean, Philly, like, really legitimizes my argument that I've said before, and I'm going to say again now. You know, the crowd in Paris, France, going to WWE this weekend, if I was WWE, do a premium live event there. If I'm AEW, you got to go to Paris, France. Those fans want, you know, their, you know, favorites to tour that country. It's different from watching on a television. It's different from watching on a bar. It's different from watching in a movie theater. Having those stars live and in person is just on a whole different level. And that's why I like Saudi Arabia, their fans. Because, you know, you think about, you know, some of the shit that goes on in Saudi Arabia. And look, hey, no country is, you know, immune to big problems. But they see their wrestlers, their favorites, from thousands and thousands and thousands of miles away. And they get the opportunity two times a year to see them up close and personal. And for them, that is something that'll last a lifetime. So to see so many AEW fans buying tickets, you know, those in the UK that just feel like, you know, wow, this is going to be something they're going to talk about 10, 20, 30 years from now. Yeah, that is legit. There are old timers who still talk about their experience of going to Wembley in 1992. You know, so this was very, very cool today. I'm very, very happy for AEW. I've said all along that, you know, the idea that Meltzer said that 30,000 would be considered a success, I felt like it was intentionally, he was intentionally lowballing it. So when they surpass it, it looks monumental. You know, I said 55 to 70,000 is definitely realistic, and it is. Problem is, today you got the worst of the worst online. The AEW haters that were hoping and praying for a horrible pre-sale, you know, low buy, you know, purchase. You had hardcore AEW fans waiting to rub it in everybody's face. You know, instead of just enjoying that your product, you know, is coming, having a big event, selling, like, people, it's an angry happiness. And I know that sounds like an oxymoron, but there's an angry happiness out there. And look, this guy from ESPN, Michael Coppinger, I don't understand why he even wrote what he wrote. And I don't blame Tony Khan to an extent for getting angry at his tweet. But something that Tony Khan said also sparked a little response from me. And, you know, got, you know, decent reaction, what I wrote, but then I had the wake-up call. And somebody that I was conversing with earlier that used to be in ECW told me, like, DT, you're fighting a lost cause. You know, do your talking on your shows. Don't write these. You're not going to convert anybody on social media. Just take it down. Because all you're going to do is you're going to get the worst of the worst that are eventually going to catch on to what you said, and they're going to go after you, and they're going to... What happened was Mike Coppinger went on Twitter, and he wrote this after we found out that AEW sold 35,000 tickets. Mike Coppinger writes, and I quote, "Hearing Wembley is scaled for only 40,000 for AEW. Far cry from last April when I was there for Tyson Fury, Dillian White, and it was packed to the brim with 94,000. Nothing beats the big fight feel at Wembley." Now, first of all, we called it fake news. I even showed you last week the bullshit seating arrangement that a lot of your clickbait journalists have put out there, that AEW is being set up for 40,000. That was a lie. Why Tony Khan and the IWC didn't shoot it down a week ago, you know, baffles me. They wait until an ESPN journalist to say this now to basically throw it out there. But anyway, Tony Khan's response to this guy, Mike Coppinger, his exact words were, quote, "Lies. What a load of crap. Tell your agent, Nick Khan, to shove it up his ass." That's Tony Khan's response. And then Tony Khan continues to say, "Since you carry the credentials of a credible reporter and represent the worldwide leader, I'm just curious, who was your source for this? And how can a reporter representing ESPN tweet something about a legit news story that's so blatantly wrong and easily verified as a falsehood?" And that got under my craw. Mike Coppinger had no business taking a shot. It's his right, but I thought it was stupid on his part. But what I thought was ridiculous also is Tony Khan's response. First of all, you know, going after Nick Khan again. I know there's a bitterness there. We remember Nick Khan calling him a kid and everything. But there's been so much fake news to benefit AEW, you know, that now you got a journalist who's doing the opposite, and it's like questioning the guy's credentials. So I went online and I wrote, look, Tony Khan, the number one thing you can do for the betterment and the future of your company is forget about WWE even existing. Do your thing. The problem is he and others have normalized and made it cool to fight and put people down who have a different preference for wrestling. You know, it's become a cool thing to do, to throw darts at your competitor. You know, and then I continued to write that before anybody labels me an AEW hater, I have praised Wembley 100%. I shot down the bullshit about the arena with the 40,000 seat setup. I said 55,000 to 75,000 is very, very doable. So before anybody calls me a hater, the only difference is I don't throw darts at WWE to support AEW. I had people throwing in my face, look at this guy, this hardcore ECW guy. Like, you're telling me that ECW experienced the difference, Renegades, hardcore, didn't go after WCW or WWE. Look at the Attitude Era when Vince McMahon was going after Bob Costas and any journalist. And, you know, I'm looking at the age of these people. I'm like, your parents didn't even fuck when this shit was going down. And I started responding to a few people, and I was like, first of all, I was doing my hotlines at the time. We were embarrassed of Vince McMahon's behavior. We thought it was steroid-induced. And there's an old saying, you don't justify stupid behavior with other stupid behavior. Then on top of it, You know, I pointed out that, you know, you're comparing the way people talked from the 90s to now. I mean, you look at the overall world from the 90s to now. There's a lot of things you're not going to say or do anymore. To try to turn around and use a 1990s climate to justify Tony Khan saying what he's saying now is ridiculous. But the ECW thing just really got to me. And that's why I got a DM from somebody who follows me. I follow them. And he's like, dude, I get it. You're spot on, but you're just wasting your time. Best thing for you to do is talk on your shows. You know, people want to hear it. They hear it, but you're not going to convert anybody online. And what I said was, back then with ECW, the big difference was if you showed up in an ECW event wearing a WWF shirt or a WCW shirt, or if you thought ECW was just hardcore garbage, but you went to an event anyway, almost every single time people would be like, hey, you know, hang out. You know, remember I used the pool reference? Hey, the water's warm. Come in. You were welcomed at ECW events. You were not mocked. You were not threatened. You were not called an asshole. You know, what the fuck is wrong with you? Are you retarded? What the fuck? You like that WWF stuff? What are you fucking retarded? You know, that's what people used to. Nobody did that. You go to ECW. Hey, look, the New Yorkers are here. The guys from Queens. Hey, how you doing? Anthony, Prince Spaghetti Day. Hey, sorry we don't have any. Nobody did that. That's the difference between then and now. And to turn around and throw that shit, and this person was like, look, these wrestlers, the fans, everybody was behind at that time. Yeah, everybody was outcast. It was the land of the misfit toys. And that's the difference. But you're not going to shut people up today. You're not going to wise them up. It's not worth it. I took all my comments down. I'm like, you know what? I just talk on my shows. I'm done with social media and putting up even legitimate things about wrestling. I put an explanation as far as how the WWE Championship with Roman Reigns is going to be handled going forward. And nobody cares. People just want that controversial reason to talk about something, even when they know the answer to it. Look at, you know, the free agents. We talked about it yesterday about Omos and Brock and others and why they're going a free agent route with some people. And people don't want to know the logical reason behind it, that Brock is an attraction, and if they need Brock on a SmackDown show, he can do it if he feels like it. Brock just showing up and picking fights with people is going to reflect what he did with Cody. People don't want that. They don't want that. So, you know, so my thoughts are, you know, as far as today, Mike Coppinger at ESPN, totally unnecessary to say what he said. If he doesn't like AEW, that's fine. But to turn around and, you know, use a 40,000-seat narrative that it was fake news, always was fake news, you know, I thought that was kind of a cheap shot. So he definitely deserved getting ripped apart. But at the same time, though, you know, you see Tony Khan's response to it, and it's like, there ain't nothing you're going to tell his motherfucker that's going to change his mind. And he's made it cool to throw darts at the competitor. And that's why this toxic atmosphere is online. That's why it's not changing anytime soon. And you have, you know, people out there that if you don't follow, if you don't kiss ass, if you don't make everything epic, amazing, unbelievable with loads of emojis and capitalized letters, that, you know, you're just ignored, banned, blocked, you know, embarrassed, criticized, and that's what it is. Cool thing about it, and why I don't get really frustrated about it, is that I do also realize that 95% of the wrestling world amongst fans are not the ones active on social media. Not like that. 95% of wrestling fans are not the ones doing that. And that's something every single one of you should remember. Social media will get boring when you take the right stand. But understand that in a whole, their noise is a very minute percentage. Roger Rubio, what are my top three WrestleMania main events in the past 10 years? And Edge having one solid year left in him. Who do I think he should feud with before he calls a career? Who would I like to see him have his final match against? Well, as far as main events, you know, I looked at the last 10 years, and I cannot say that every single main event has really, you know, done it for me. But since you're focusing on main events, I got to go with Roman Reigns versus Cody Rhodes. I got to go with the Boneyard match between Undertaker and AJ Styles. And I got to go with Becky, Ronda, Charlotte. I know the finish was kind of botched, but, you know, it was, you know, an interesting build. You know, before anybody criticizes my choices, remember he said main events. And also, you look at the last 10 years. There were some that were like 11, 12, 13 years that were like, fuck, I can't put him on the list. As far as Edge, as far as who he feuds with, I don't think Edge will have that many feuds in the last year. I mean, he will have his moments. I'm sure he'll do something with Austin Theory. I definitely see him doing something with Roman Reigns once again. At the end of the day, I think as far as retirement goes, I think his, you know, he says he's got one more year left in him. And we haven't really touched on that yet. Maybe we'll touch on it this coming weekend. I think him no longer saying 2023 is his final year. And look, 2023 still has 7 months in it. That is, you know, more than half a year. So just because he said he has got one good year in him doesn't mean that, you know, he's going to continue past 2023. My reaction to that is, oh, he's going to rest, you know, maybe WrestleMania 40 will be it for him. And number two, Christian Cage. We don't know what his AEW contract looks like. Nobody has still clarified it, even though we have brought that up 1,000 times. So Christian Cage, I still feel when Edge goes out in the blaze of glory, it's got to be with Christian Cage. If Christian is absolutely not available, you know, look, Randy Orton, I'm not thrilled about him being his final match, but I could go with AJ Styles. I think AJ Styles would be a nice way for Edge to go out. But Christian Cage, top of my list. Top of my list. Shout out to Kyle Kaczmarski. Do I think the new WWE World Heavyweight Championship will follow the lineage of 2002 to 2013's World Heavyweight Championship? I've brought this up a few times since last Monday. And, you know, the way you worded it is very interesting because, you know, that lineage is not just 11 years. If you go online and you actually look up the lineage, it's very confusing at times. So I don't blame you for bringing up that 11-year lineage. And I have said this countless times over the years, you know, Eric Bischoff handing Triple H the championship, you know, is a moment that I will never forget because of my work with XPW. That is the night that I've told this story 1,000 times over the years that I'm on the New Jersey Turnpike racing to Philly, having to bring them the tape so XPW could have their first ever, you know, Philly show on the old ECW channel. And while we were on the highway, the phone goes off. And we're on speaker, you know, you're not going to believe this. They fucking gave the old WCW World Heavyweight Championship to Triple H. Huh? What are you talking about? Bischoff just fucking, and at that time it was the Triple H show. But no, the lineage at the end of the day is going to go back as far as history. I think it could very well end up being the Universal Championship. I think the 1,000 days focus is the most important answer to that because the 1,000 days have to do with the Universal Championship. If you look at the titles, the two that he carries, one reign is about 390 days. The other reign is 970 days. So when you look at that aspect of it, that tells me it's going to follow the lineage of the Universal Championship. Only because of the 1,000 days. But it's a really sticky situation because the World Heavyweight Championship, Does that pick up the lineage of the WWWF and the WWF? Is it a brand new lineage? You see where I'm saying? It's very confusing. So, but one thing I do not believe it'll be is the 2002 to 2013 lineage, because I think it's just a little bit too confusing. I personally think you continue the lineage of the Universal title and the World Heavyweight Championship. I always felt that the WWE Championship was the WWE World Heavyweight Championship. You know, remember when Jericho was a double champion and, you know, it was the WWE World Heavyweight Championship, and then it was the WWE Championship, and then it was this, it was that. I mean, they manipulated the names over the years, and it's become a little bit confusing. I mean, look how the record books are going to appear now with Bianca Belair and Rhea Ripley. You know, with them now on different brands, and, you know, their lineage is being reset. You know, look at that in itself. And that was unnecessary. That was unnecessary. Speaking of that lineage, I'll get into Aaron. He said, you know, Triple H said the draft will change WWE to its very core. What about the possibility that the Raw Women's Championship continues to be defended on SmackDown and the SmackDown Women's Championship continues to be defended on Raw? Dude, that would be such an easy solution. You know, you can trade them back. I know it sounds crazy, but the reason why they're not trading Bianca back to Raw and Rhea back to SmackDown is because Rhea is still going to be associated with Judgment Day. Bianca is going to be with Montez Ford, and they didn't want to have them lose the championships just to regain it. So they swapped the titles once before. You know, I've said this in the past. When they did the title swap with the women's belts a couple of years ago, you didn't lose any viewers. You had some complaints on social media. People ate a Snickers bar, and they forgot about it. You know, at the end of the day, we're watching entertainment. Stats are fine and everything, but we're watching entertainment. It's a storyline that Roman Reigns has not been defeated in almost 1,000 days. It's a fucking storyline. So, changing lineages, we got to eat a Snickers bar and not take it very, very seriously. You know, that's something people need to realize. At the end of the day, this is an entertainment lineage. So that's why I don't think they're going to do what you suggested, Aaron. Also, he believes the new World Heavyweight title will be the big gold belt lineage that started 2002. When Eric Bischoff made Triple H the inaugural champion. Does it sound very familiar, Kyle? I say the same thing I said a few moments ago about Kyle. Kyle, Aaron, a lot of you out there have echoed the same thing. I've seen the conversations. I've seen the comments. A lot of people think that that would be the lineage to go with. Personally, if that's the lineage they do for Raw, I'm fine with it. Because Seth Rollins, you know, he doesn't care about the lineage. He doesn't care that it's a created title. When Seth Rollins wins that championship, he has earned it. It's not the pity title. Roman will definitely use that in a promo, but at the end of the day, Seth in the ring is going to show everyone why this championship is very, 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 very important. You know, at some point, the NWA World Heavyweight Championship became the WCW World Heavyweight Championship. Titles will morph and change. But again, if they decide to do that lineage on Raw, I'm fine with it. I'm fine with it. It's not necessarily the lineage we need to be concerned about. It's who's the champion, how it's defended, and who it's defended against. At the end of the day, that's what matters. Because remember, this is entertainment. Aaron saw the SmackDown lowdown when JD McDonagh was drafted to Raw. Sounded genuine and a little emotional. If this Irish ace acted like that as a babyface on Raw, he thinks he would really get over. I think JD McDonagh just has that face you want to punch. JD McDonagh, I do not see as a babyface. Look, he got emotional tonight. He had a match with Dragon Lee that everybody's talking about that I'm going to watch late tonight before I go to sleep. And he thanked the fans. That's a real human moment. Twix, by the way, Tessa Blanchard, I said I'm going to talk about on Wednesday Night Dynamite. So I am trying to find out how long her deal is. Somebody said 3 events. Somebody said 5 events. So, you know, Tessa Blanchard we'll talk about on Wednesday. I don't really have much of a thought about it right now. XPW is not the XPW of even, you know, the early 2000s. It is, yeah. Tessa Blanchard, yeah. But getting back to Jada McDonough is great heel. You know, showing a little real emotion. Jada McDonough is not an asshole in real life. In real life, people say a lot of nice things about Jada McDonough. So that being portrayed on TV, you're taking real life emotion and trying to change the character to reflect it. I don't think it would work. Jada McDonough just, he is someone you look at, he's just someone, for, you know, you just feel like you want to punch him in the face. And that's a compliment to him. They're not, you know, it's not that often you get someone and you just look at them like that motherfucker's a heel. Yeah, that, I mean, some people you could do that with, but, you know, just backing it up in the ring, too. I want to see how they incorporate him and Finn Balor. That's what I want to see. I want to see Finn Balor maybe tease trying to get him in Judgment Day. I want to see, but the problem is, you know, I want to see them have a match. Who's going to be the babyface? You know, it's not, you don't want Finn Balor to be cheered because he's cool and doing stuff with Judgment Day and this and that. So thank you, Twix, for confirming what I've said probably 10 times in the last 24 hours. Tessa signed a multi-show deal with XPW. I am trying to find out if it's 3 events or if it's 5 events. It's not that many events. But once I get the information, I'll share it with everybody. Aaron, first Dynamite after MJF won the championship, he said something offensive that he'll have a reign where Bruno will roll in his shitty little grave. Look, it's MJF being a heel. Roddy Piper used to take some massive cheap shots about Bruno back in the day. In fact, Bruno, I think, came out of retirement, I think, to have a match with Roddy Piper. MJF is just being MJF. You know, there's a question coming up in a little bit. I think it was Eric Williams who asked about, you know, like, what wrestlers have we come across that really made you feel wrestling was real? I kind of tweaked this question a little bit, where what wrestlers really blurred the lines, where you really couldn't tell, like, what was reality and what was fantasy or sports entertainment. But MJF is one of those, and MJF is a good example of you can go old school in 2023 and make it work. The reason why not a lot of people do that is because of laziness. You know, let's be honest. I mean, whatever you feel about MJF, you know, this guy has to be sharp as a tack about his character. And any time he's around somebody in public, I'm telling you, that photo that I'm obsessed with that asshole from the Jacksonville Jaguars posting it, that photo hurt MJF. You know, in the long run, we know we're talking about sports entertainment. You know, at the end of the day, we know that's what it is. But there was no need to show a photo where MJF is standing side by side with Chris Jericho, watching on a monitor the first half of the recorded Stadium Stampede. You know, yes, MJF is friends with a lot of people he feuds with. We don't need to know that. We know at the end of the day, friends, that wrestling is sports entertainment. It's suspension of disbelief. Wrestling is at its finest when you suspend this disbelief. I mean, at the end of the day, when you truly feel that the two people in the ring truly hate each other, that's when wrestling is at its best. You don't want to know that they're out having a beer afterwards or going over somebody's house and having a barbecue and just celebrating what they just did. You know, back in, what, 87 with the Iron Sheik and Hacksaw Jim Duggan, you have no fucking idea how much that affected Northeast fans over here. I mean, we knew it by then. We were old enough to know what pro wrestling was. But everybody, let me put it like this. If you see how social media is now, where people want to rub shit in your face for something they support that they feel you don't, just because you don't go wacky like they do. Imagine then everybody who hated pro wrestling that couldn't wait to rub it in your face. You see? See, it's fucking fake. See, those motherfuckers, they're not feuding with each other. They fucking, they're doing drugs and they're fucking riding the road together. You know, it's like, I don't need to be shown that. Like, it's suspension of disbelief. Like, you go to a movie, you go to a sci-fi movie. Imagine sitting in the chair getting ready for the movie, and then you got some asshole next to you that every time a clip was, because he's seen the movie, every time something's about to, and then you hear that person saying to his boyfriend or girlfriend, like, oh, that's not real. Oh, did you see that? Oh, they did it this way. That was computer generated. That's AI. And it's a, like, shut the fuck up. Let me enjoy my movie. I know what it is. I don't need to hear you telling me this. All right. Last but not least, from Aaron, sometimes in nature, being deadly does not matter. In the end of the ecosystem, will still get you. One of the most deadliest snakes is the black mamba. Its venom against its prey could even kill a human in 20 minutes. But then one day, the same snake could get eaten by an eagle. My thoughts, oh, it's karma. It's karma. It is what it is. You know, at the end of the day, you could seem invincible. I'll give you a really dumb comparison. I used to smoke. I'm not kidding. And I know Aaron right now and everybody's like, what the fuck does it have to do with a snake? By the way, I will tell you something about a snake in a minute. There's a Twitter video floating around that you might want to go check out. It's pretty grotesque, but, you know, for some reason, you know why I've muted so many people on Twitter? I'm getting suggestions all over the place. And I'm like, why am I still getting suggestions for these? I don't follow any of them. And I realize they're all recommended videos. But anyway, I used to smoke. I stopped smoking, I would say around 2003. I would say around there, 2002, 2003. And before I quit smoking, and I used to have people, family members, friends used to say to me, you know, Anthony, why are you smoking? You're going to fucking get lung cancer. It's not good for you. Why are you smoking? And my answer back used to be, you know what? You know, all right, what happens when I quit smoking and then I walk down the street and I get run over by a truck? Or somebody fucking robs me and shoots me in the head? Or if I fucking, you know, fall down a flight of stairs and I break my neck? I said, you're trying to make me think that by me quitting smoking, I'm going to live to be 90. Like, there's so many things that could happen to me, so I might as well enjoy myself. That was the answer I used to give to people. Like, you're telling me to quit smoking, but I could fucking cross the street right now and get run over by a bread truck. Like, wow, that sucked. I quit smoking. Look at, we were just talking. I was talking to somebody online in wrestling about Chris Candido. We just passed the anniversary of his passing. And, I still remember it like it was yesterday. That motherfucker cleaned up his habit, his drug habit, and he was so proud. And shortly thereafter, clean, he fucking dies of an aneurysm, you know, like the blood clot. And, you know, it's like we were thrilled to know that it wasn't an overdose. That was the thing back then. You know, I know this is a little behind the scenes stuff, but that was the thing back then that a lot of us were very worried about. Like, oh shit, hopefully he didn't, you know, fall off the wagon. And, you know, nah, he was clean. But I remember so many people like, wow, he fucking straightened his life out. He cleaned up his act and a fucking blood clot took him down. You know, it's almost like the same mentality you think about it. Like, you don't want to deprive yourself of something. Because who knows what happens tomorrow? You know, it's almost like when somebody says, oh, you know, you only have 24 hours to live. What are you going to do? And you say all these insane fucking things because you know that you only have 24 hours left. When it comes to the ecosystem and everything else, you know, eventually, you know, you might be invincible or you may have things that make you invincible. And at the end of the day, something else takes you down. Whether it's a bread truck or an eagle. I'm having a sip of water. little cotton mouth tonight, everybody. We still got a lot of questions. It's loaded tonight. Won't be wee hours in the morning loaded, but nice conversations tonight. I love all the questions. I can't, every single one of them. By the way, if you want to fascinate yourself a little bit, there's a Twitter video floating around of a snake. The snake got its head chopped off. The head of the snake is alongside the snake. Now, apparently a snake could still live for 2 hours after losing its head. And if you watch this video, please do not post it in the chat. Actually, you can, because it won't automatically play. You know, it's up to you all if you want to hit play. Somebody wants to post it right ahead. But basically what happens is the head is literally there, and the snake is headless, and the snake, headless, bumps into the head. Oh, excuse me. And the fucking head opens its mouth, shows its fangs, and starts biting itself. And the body of the snake has no brain because the head was and the snake reacts to it. And I don't like watching videos like that, but that fucking amazed me because I just don't know how that is possible. It's because once the head is removed, like what? It's a wild video. It's not fake. It's a wild video. It's not extremely grotesque. I think you'll probably, put it this way, if you smoke, you'll probably be like, dude, how could that be? Dude, let me try it. No, don't try it. Getting back to Kyle's questions, yesterday he saw the big George Foreman movie. Was I ever a fan of boxing? Do I have any memories of George Foreman? First of all, I used to love boxing. I had a hard time staying a fan of boxing once Mike Tyson was done. I absolutely loved George Foreman back in the day. Loved Muhammad Ali. Loved even Evander Holyfield. Lennox Lewis I enjoyed too. But Mike Tyson, it just was on a different level. I remember, my God, I don't know, it was 1988, 89, somewhere around there. We went to a party, and it was in a bad neighborhood, and it was probably about 90% black at this party. And the only reason why I'm bringing it up is because you think of, you know, us Italian white guys from Howard Beach are like, what, are they coming there to start trouble? No, we had friends of friends going there, but everybody thought Mike Tyson was going to be there. He ended up, he wasn't there. We didn't stay all that long. But the thing is, when Mike Tyson had a fight, everybody stopped. I remember where I was when he fucking lost that fight that time. With Buster Douglas, I think it was. I was in my car, and it was late. And I was in my car, and I was, like, exhausted. And I just remember listening to WFAN. They didn't air play-by-play. They would just give us a little recap. The judge's award, 10-9, 9-10, whatever it was. And then when they said he got knocked out, everybody was quiet, silent. Like, you would have thought somebody died. Insane. Mike Tyson made everybody a boxing fan here for the most part. I mean, not everybody, because, you know, a lot of people also felt he was a disgusting abuser. You know, if you remember the infamous 2020, I think it was 2020 that he was on, whatever that TV show was, with his ex-wife. But George Foreman, I was a big fan of. When he was trying to still do it in his 40s, you know, by then he had the grill. And he was pitching other stuff, and he had that baby face about him. You know, just like, I remember how big he was and how he loved to eat. And I used to say to myself, you know, I hope I look that good when I'm fat and old. Like, he made it almost like, hey, being a little bit overweight, you know, it's not the worst thing in the world. He loved his burgers. He loved his other foods. George Foreman was awesome, man. And he could fight. He was so goddamn slow, though, in the latter part of his career. Like, I still don't understand how he won some of the fights he did. It was short-lived. His comeback was short-lived, but that's a movie I want to see. That movie I want to see, the one about Air Jordan I want to see, and I want to see the one about Michael J. Fox. Thank you to everybody who gave me the suggestions about the new Beavis and Butthead show returning. I got to be honest with you. I haven't gone through episode 2 yet. I don't like these breaks that they're doing. You know, like, I understand that, you know, there's no longer music videos, you know, that are really around these days that you could really recap like that. And you got to be so fucking careful these days, especially on who you criticize. I kind of wish that they would still watch 90s and 80s videos because we all like a little nostalgia. They don't want to pay royalties. But they do these cuts now. Like, they showed a guy doing tattoos in jail, and they showed some woman, some girl, like, getting approved for a college. And I was like, I couldn't watch it. Like, I fast forward, even fast forwarding it, it's like, wow, it just totally, it ruins the moment. It's like you're about to have sex with your significant other and you're really into it and the fucking doorbell rings and you have to answer it. It's like, it just, those segments ruined it for me. When I got to a second episode where Beavis is with Fire or whatever, Fire, Fire, I was like, I can't watch this. So for some reason, I'm getting the same vibes like the Irishman. Remember when the Irishman came out? A lot of people are like, oh, if you love Goodfellas, you love the Irishman. Goodfellas is my favorite movie of all time. And they got to a point where I was just like, I can't turn it off. Turn it off. But honey, turn it off. Turn it off. I can't watch it. Fuck it. I turn it off. It just gets to a point where you just like, I can't. Just that's it. It's over. And that's how I feel now with these Beavis and Buttheads. So Saturday, he ate dinner at a diner. Dinner at a diner called Gus's Diner in Verona, Wisconsin. Vintage 60s decor with mini jukeboxes on each booth. Have I ever used a jukebox? The answer is yes. And I am old enough to remember those fucking little jukeboxes at every diner table. You put a quarter in and you would have these square buttons. Usually was a square box. You put a quarter in and you could select songs and it would play at your table. And it was a good concept until you realized that the table in front of you and the table behind you were too close. So you'd be wanting to, like, listen to maybe like the Police or maybe listen to a little bit of vintage Led Zeppelin and the person in front of you, pick me up before you go, go. I fucking hate that song. I'm glad they're solo. Like, I'm like, that killed it. It was a good concept. Back in the 50s, I went, no joke, back in the 90s, I don't remember where it was, but it was in upstate New York. Me and my friends went to a diner. I think we were going to the Ramapo River at the time, and it still had a lot of 50s retro inside it, like the original boxes. And, you know, they had a big jukebox. And I, no, this is legit. Back in the 90s, I wanted a jukebox for my house. Even though, listen, I still spin records once in a while. I haven't done it recently. I still have so many white labels that I want to mix. Believe me, I still get into the urge to mix records. I still got tons. But I always wanted a jukebox. I always wanted one in the corner with the crazy, beautiful lights. And you hit the button and it still plays like the old CDs or however the setup was. But then I realized, you know, like, I don't see myself, like, I can't see myself going home and, like, pushing a button, especially in this day and age. Now I'm married, I go home and I expect to push a button and hear maybe Nat King Cole or Tony Bennett or Frank Sinatra. And then I look and then my wife's like, honey, I put 50 Cent, you know, in the jukebox. Is that okay? I put Kanye. Is that okay? I'm like, what? What? So, yeah. That's why I don't have a jukebox, but I always wanted one. I always wanted one. Crazy Cruiserweight. What are my thoughts on the Raka Khan lawsuit that was filed? Can she really move forward with it? He thinks she needs to get some serious mental help. Cruiserweight, you're very lucky we don't have your real identity online because Raka Khan, Trinisha Biggers, would probably try to sue you now for criticizing her. Look, she's a whack job. I am just thankful that I am not part of that lawsuit because she cursed me out back in the day when I talked about how I don't like Biggers, that Biggers should be in a White Castle preparing my clam strips. And yeah, I was like pushing that line where Biggers rhymes with another word, but we were talking about Trinisha Biggers. And after I did my whole rant, I was like, wait, What were you all thinking, you disgusting pigs, you? You thought I was talking about something else, huh? No, I was talking about Raka Khan because we thought Raka Khan was a psycho at that time. Remember when she went after Kurt Angle? She was a psycho back then, and she's still a psycho now. But she proves, anybody remember Captain Lenny? Anybody go back to with me to the hotline days? I'm sure a lot of you remember Captain Lenny. I've on so many older shows when I first went video. For some of those, they think the Sunday shows, we were playing vintage Captain Lenny. That guy tried to sue me. That guy tried to sue tons of people. Anybody could sue anybody pretty much for any reason. And some fucking lawyer got some type of commitment from Trenisha Biggers to go ahead and file this lawsuit. She's suing for $3 billion against The Rock, Chris Benoit, Mick Foley, Nikki Bella, the New York Police Department, Home Depot, and tons of other, Jim Cornette. And she's claiming that everybody conspired to, like, kidnap her kids and stuff like that. That just shows you, you know, that, yeah, even crazies could try to sue people. Now, at the end of the day, you know, the court is going to have to make a motion that it's a frivolous lawsuit. The question is, what celebrity out there is going to actually pay a lawyer to go to court and request this to be thrown out because it's a frivolous lawsuit? You know, that's the problem that nobody's thinking about right now. But, yeah, she's lost it, man. I've never watched her YouTube videos that some people have told me to watch. You know, like, I feel bad. I feel bad for her, really. Because mental health, at the end of the day, man, I mean, we could all look at someone and call them a dumpster fire and call them this. But at the end of the day, there is something deeper that's very, very troubling. And she is extremely disturbed. That lawsuit is kind of comedic, but at the same time, at the end of the day, you're talking about a very, very, very sick individual. And yes, crazies can file lawsuits. Breaking news. You don't see, you're not required in a court of law to prove why you are suing someone to sue them. I could turn around and sue any of you motherfuckers. Any of you out there that I still got your addresses from some contest from back in the day, I could fucking send you lawsuits for any reason I want. And if you don't answer it, I might get lucky and it might go into default. And I win by default. People do that. People do send crazy lawsuits. The fuck is this? I don't even know this person. He threw it in the garbage. And then next thing you know, you got a judgment against you for $500. For what? Well, you never answered this in court. It's a scary thing, man. Remember my Judge Judy situation. You know, for those that don't know the story, I'll be quick with it because we got a lot of questions to get into still. I used to write a lot of livery insurance, dollar vans, you know, for hire vehicles, and I stopped doing it. And there was a lot of fraud, and that's why I stopped. But there was one guy who lied on his application, gave me like a $2,500 deposit. And the insurance company found out that the guy lied on his application, said he was doing work in an area that was much cheaper than where he was actually working. I think he was working in Brooklyn. And they ended up taking his deposit and they kept it. And they said, okay, you owe us a lot more money. And he canceled his policy within like 2 weeks. He never got his money back because he fucking lied. And they ate up all his money. So next thing I know, I'm being sued in court for him. Small claims court for the money. And I'm like, what's he suing me for? I didn't do nothing wrong. Next thing I know, I get a letter in the mail from Judge Judy that they would like to know if I'd like to have my case decided on TV. So I called them up as a joke. I still have the letter somewhere. It's somewhere in one of my desks in my office. I got to find it one day and show you all. But I called them up. And that's when I found out about these judge TV shows, like the People's Court and this and that. I never knew how it worked. When you agree to have your case decided on TV, you get the money. And the court pays it. So they said to me, they're like, look, even if you lose the case, the court will pay the money to the plaintiff. And I turned around and I said, I'm not interested. And they said, why? If you lose the case, we pay for it. I said, I'm not interested. I said, I don't, because first of all, this case is bullshit in the first place. Second of all, God forbid I lose. Then every fucking livery person that ever committed fraud is going to try to sue me thinking that they can get the money back. I'm not going to become a regular. And they pushed it. Like, well, could you reconsider? I said, how's about I reconsider that you shut the fuck up? And I hung up on them. They really got me mad. And the guy ended up dropping the case because, you know, some other people he worked with are like, hey, you know, he didn't do anything wrong. Let it go. The guy let it go. But, yeah, you can sue even if you have no basis. And it's scary. It is scary. Captain Lenny used to scare the shit out of me, man. I still have that episode with me, him, and the Masked Maniac. And the Masked Maniac is asking him, why are you suing Anthony for? He was suing me. I legitimately would have had to hire a lawyer. And there ain't no fucking Angie's List lawyers. Even back then, you pay $10, get defended in court. I didn't want to spend hundreds, if not thousands of dollars because some whack job with a hotline. I'm suing Anthony because he doesn't plug my hotline. I'm like, are you? I got to play that audio again. I still have it. I mean, the man's being asked him, why are you suing Anthony? Because he doesn't plug my chokeslam wrestling hotline, whatever his hotline was at the time. Call the Captain Lenny hotline. He used to give his home phone number out. I still know his home phone number by heart, but I won't give it out. If you Google it, you can find it. Look up Lenny Dauber, D-A-U-B-E-R. Type in Lenny Dauber or Captain Lenny Wrestling Hotline. You'll see a 212 number, 677. 212-677. We won't say the last four digits. Because, look, his hotline has been closed now for 20 years. I won't put it publicly. And then somebody actually calls him up. And, yeah, he's still alive from what I understand. I don't need him to sue me. Not you gave out my phone number. Eat, save, burn. Cucumbers, carrots, string beans. Believe it or not, I ate carrots tonight, Cruiserweight. I gained about 6 pounds since I got married, so I'm trying to lose them. And I'm trying to replace, like, pop chips with carrots. I'm not the biggest carrot fan. I used to love eating cucumbers. But I actually enjoy string beans. My parents used to plant to grow string beans. For some reason, there's nothing like eating fresh string beans pulled right off the plant. This carrots is probably the one I would burn. I don't like cooked carrots. Seriously, I could be 80 years old with no teeth, and the only thing left to eat on this earth was carrots. I'd eat someone's ass out before I would eat carrots. I don't like carrots. Carrots, I enjoy cold, crunchy, with a little bit of maybe low-fat ranch or feta dressing. That's fine. But cooked carrots, no thank you. No thank you. So I would burn the carrots. I would eat the cucumbers and I would save the string beans because string beans actually do last a little while. And dehydrated string beans are great too. You ever dehydrate vegetables? I've ventured in that in the past. I still got my dehydrator somewhere. He saw a PSA many years ago. He wanted my thoughts on it. Now, obviously, I can't play the PSA here, but if anybody is interested, you go on YouTube and the name of the title of the video, the PSA, is called Women's Refuge Advertisement. That's the name of the video. It's from New Zealand. I had never seen it up until today, but I watched it, and it is out there, everyone. The only way I could explain it is it has to do about domestic violence, and it looks like almost like a dollhouse, like a children's house. And the mother baked the cake, and the husband comes home from work. Look, honey, I baked the cake. And it's supposed to be like a children's like vibe to it. And she accidentally drops like two fake plastic cups. And she looks at like what's supposed to be, I guess, her kid off camera. And she's like, oh, daddy's just playing around. And I'm like, he didn't do anything. Yeah, boom, boom. And I'm like, oh, okay, never mind. We're supposed to be perceived that the husband just beat the shit out of the wife because she dropped a cup. It's a wild fucking video. New Zealand's got some weird PSAs, man. Public service announcements. I mean, look, women's abuse is no joke. Shit. We just had the conversation about the Britt Baker black eye shirt. And I appreciate everybody who put feedback online. but, you know, I didn't see the feedback that I thought it would spark an interesting conversation. And then I realize once again that I try to stay in the middle. And I do realize if I gush over AEW or if I shit on AEW, I would get a much bigger response from the public out there. Because I'm down the middle, I get both sides of the coin. So a lot of people are afraid to respond because if they say, yeah, that shirt is stupid, then you got people who support the shirt that'll be like, what are you, fucking stupid? So you got to take like one strong side, especially about AEW. You either got to love them or you got to hate them. You're allowed a little in the middle, but when you clearly stay straight down the middle, you get very little response. People don't want to like your stuff because they don't want it. They're almost on record saying, yeah, I think the shirt is stupid too. I put the clip online. There was like 5,000 people watched the video and only like four reacted to it. I'm like, again, that's why I don't even waste my time. Because when you're straight down the middle, people are afraid to take a side. Speaking of online and wrestling, Mr. Rams fan, Mr. Bison, Sean, asks if Dave Meltzer never did any of those favors for me over the years, would I have canceled my subscription to him sooner and called him out on his bullshit sooner? Honestly, no, because I've always, for decades, knew his preference, his fandomhood for Japanese wrestling. He would always go the extra mile, it felt, for Japanese wrestling. But his newsletter has so much content in it, I just skip the Japanese content. Like, I just read what I want to read. I know there's a little bias there. I get past it. I do agree that a lot of what he's doing now, the stances he's taking. Listen, I don't mean to disrespect him. And again, this is something that I would have loved to have tweeted. But again, because I try to play both sides, I try to be down the middle. If I post it, I'm going to get no reaction because I'm not clear-cut 100% or close to it supporter of Meltzer, and I'm not 100% anti-Meltzer. But I thought about it today. And I said to myself, who the fuck a Ticketmaster in the UK is going to leak out to Dave Meltzer how many tickets were sold? How is it that Dave Meltzer is the only one that knows? And Ticketmaster is not, they're not in the game of going online and releasing private numbers. It's nobody's business for a private company, which is All Elite Wrestling. It's not a publicly traded company. Ticketmaster would be violating laws if they publicly said, Mr. Meltzer, that's not correct. They actually only sold blah, 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 blah tickets. I'm not disputing the 35,000 number. Well, who do you think leaked that shit out to Dave Meltzer? Who do you think? People within AEW. Because they're the ones that put the tickets on sale. They're the ones with the building. They monitor privately how many tickets are gone and where and how and which seats. They leak it to Meltzer. When he releases these numbers so early on, you think Ticketmaster? No. So there's a bias, and I understand where the bias comes from. I will say that the stuff with CM Punk now and even FTR, you know, it's on a level that I'm like, you know, I'm kind of tired of journalists trying to be part of a storyline. And that's what's happening. But is it going to cause me... Listen, Brian Alvarez making fun of Braun Strowman. I didn't have a problem so much of him doing it. My problem with Brian Alvarez is that he never tweet... Because he didn't know that Braun had a concussion at the time. But once it was revealed, like, you should immediately go on Twitter and say, listen, you know, we were not aware that, you know, but apparently this is the reason why, and we wish a speedy recovery to Braun Strowman. Now, good news is he recovered quickly. But the fact that you couldn't even just, you know, be a human being and just wish him well publicly in a tweet, that kind of made me think, like, why am I supporting these people financially? Like, why am I going over and beyond defending AEW to the moon for everything? Because, like I said, everything with Wembley, I've cleared up the bullshit about the seating arrangement. I showed you Rihanna screenshots and explained why 30,000 would be success is a ridiculously low number. I mean, I have gone out of my way to support AEW quite a bit, but because I offer a little criticism as well, you know, and I basically call Tony Khan out on that stuff, like, I'm on the ignore list. And yeah, there is an ignore list out there. I mean, the reason why I still do it is because of the people tuning in. I'm not going to not cover AEW because they show no appreciation for what I do or some other people out there do. I do what I do for everybody who supports me, who tunes into my stuff. I don't do it for them. But financially, you know, why am I going to go out and drop money into these companies? You know, I'll watch. That's why even with their pay-per-views, you know, in the past, I've just ordered them and watched them on my Roku or my computer, and now I get the fucking VPN, and I fucking pay one-third of the price or whatever it is. You know, if I could save some money, you best damn believe I'm going to fucking put me before them. So I don't know if I would have canceled my subscription because I already knew what Dave, his preferences were. But it's to a point now where now I'm starting to think, like, you know, do I really need to be spending this money? I know it's a small amount of money, but still, you know, $5 here, $10 here. Look, I can't even get people to drop $1.99 online. Hey, I do a Q&A, this and that. And, you know, we're going to do a I announced 2 weeks ago that we was going to do the next Q&A was going to be channel members only. And I'm not kidding. I got about 16 emails from people like, you know, DT, I know you said it was channel member only, but could, you know, I submit a question anyway. What am I supposed to say? You know, I mean, I'm not a dick like that, but I'm saying to myself at the same time, I'm like, you can't even get people to drop $1.99 a month, not for one show, but for an entire month. And you realize at the same time, though, that, hey, for them, it might be the same thing. You put $5 here, you put $2 here, you put $10 here, and some people are already, you know, putting too much money out there. So, you know, you got to try to find a nice balance. But honestly, I kind of feel like, you know, my subscription to Meltzer might be coming to an end soon because it's not benefiting me. And believe me, there ain't going to be one day that Meltzer's going to come up to me at a convention or something and say, hey, Anthony, thank you for supporting my newsletter for all these decades, all these years. You think that's going to happen? No. Think I'm going to get a holiday card from him? No. So I'm not subscribing out of just thankfulness of what he's done in the past, but I will always have that respect because that was very, very cool of him to do those couple of times. He did not have to do that. I didn't even ask him. He was one of the few asked, and that was pretty fucking cool. Did I ever announce the winners of the WrestleMania predictions contest? Yeah, I actually did. I think Eddie, if you go to the entries for WrestleMania, I know it says winner on there. I think it was Eddie that won it. I already PayPal'd him his money. Eddie's around. I PayPal'd him his prize, and on YouTube, I think it was, who won? I don't know if it was Ronnie or it might have been Frank that won, but I know the winner is posted on YouTube as well. And by the way, the predictions contest for Backlash, I'm putting it up maybe Wednesday night, believe it or not. I might put it up as early as Wednesday night because I don't think the matches are going to change. You know, we got 7 matches. By the way, I think this thumbnail I did for this time around came out pretty nice. I like the way that came out. I did that myself. I'm starting to get better at the thumbnails. It's just funny, though, because, like, I'm pulling away from video a little bit, focusing more on the audio side and, you know, a little bit more with Patreon and stuff. And it's like now I'm starting to get good with the thumbnails and, you know, now I don't need them as much as I did before, especially when you do, like, see, like the draft, a lot of people loved my thumbnail for the draft this time around. But when you do audio only, you have to use square boxes. And like you, as you see here, there's not as much room. So they don't look as nice. But the color on the Backlash one came out really nice. But for Patreon and for YouTube channel members, the predictions contest will be up this week, either Wednesday or Thursday. I don't believe any other matches will be announced. And by the way, if you understand Spanish, go on Twitter because Damian Priest is in Puerto Rico already promoting Backlash. And he showed up on a talk show, very, very well received, very, very cool. I didn't understand a word he fucking said. There was no, you know, like translation underneath. But he came across like a superstar. You could see when he first came in, I think some of the crowd was like, who is this guy? And halfway through, the crowd was eating him up. I knew they knew about something with him and Bad Bunny. Because I did him, Bad Bunny. And I was like, oh, they're talking about Backlash. Obviously. So, but yeah, if you go on DonTony.com, I definitely put the winner on there. And I know I announced it on one of the episodes, but yeah, I already hooked up Eddie. And YouTube, I honestly don't remember right now. Dominic Mysterio or Vicky Guerrero, who had the bigger, better heat from the crowd? That is an amazing question because I got that from three other people as well. I got that from Tony, I got that from Frank, and I got that from Johnny D. And it's on the synopsis for this dual episode. Yeah, I think a lot of people forgot the nuclear heat that Vicky used to get with the excuse me. I mean, that was, you know what? Right now I got to give the edge to Dominic, and I'll tell you why. Because with Vicky, it became part of the act. She does the excuse me, and you boo. And if you keep booing, she'll yell it even louder. Excuse me! So it felt like the fans were now part of an act where they would just boo as part of it because Vicky will go into her antics with it. I think Dominic Mysterio, though, he's on a different level. Because those fans, look, everybody at the end of the day always felt sympathy for Vicky because of Eddie's passing. And Dominic, people want to see him get his ass kicked. People really didn't want to see Vicky get her ass kicked. Like, they didn't, I mean, there was a lot of us at the time that didn't understand why is Vicky a character on TV. I mean, she made it work, but a lot of us felt like, is she a character simply because her husband died? You know what I mean? Like, why is she on TV? Quickly, she became a character where the fans legitimately didn't like her as much. She did the cougar stuff. Remember the storylines, I think, with Edge and others. But Dominic right now, as early as he is in his career, that crowd fucking wants to get his ass kicked. There is a really cool van. Again, I wish I could comment online. But again, there are people out there that refuse to publicly acknowledge anything positive with Vince McMahon. Dominic Mysterio, after his WrestleMania match against Rey, when he went in the back, he went right up to Vince McMahon and hugged him and thanked him. And Vince told Dominic, and you could audibly hear it, that not too many people could get the reaction like you're getting right now. And it is a really, really cool video. But you can't praise it because Vince McMahon is a sexual abuser. And that's what sucks more than anything about social media right now. Like, unless you are woke or you're into something that the Cool Kids Club is into as well, like, people will just ignore it, look the other way, act like they didn't see it, don't want to go on record. And that's a damn shame. It is a damn shame. Go online, you'll see it. David Peralta is asking, did I see the Chris Van Vliet interview with Will Sasso? And if so, what did I think of his Jesse Ventura impersonation? I did not watch the interview because I honestly could care less about Will Sasso. At this day and age, I really don't care much about him. I did see his impersonation of Jesse Ventura, though, and he killed it. he killed it. It's scary. Like, I know lately the video everybody is watching is somebody voicing over Gorilla Monsoon. I think it's if Gorilla Monsoon had a podcast or whatever. And I have listened to a few. I feel like they've jumped the shark a little bit now. You know, some of it is just really, really stupid at this point. But it's still whoever, you know, is doing it, and who knows the way AI is these days and how you can manipulate voice and everything. But Will Sasso doing the Jesse Ventura impersonation, he killed it. I mean, seriously, you could have legitimately closed your eyes and thought that was Jesse Ventura. And that's, you know, that's cool. Anybody that could impersonate someone, especially if you're a fan. And that's the one cool thing about Will Sasso. He is a wrestling fan, and that's one thing I'll always appreciate. But, you know, I really did not find interest in, you know, like checking out, you know, the interview, though. But it was very well received. Mark Hicks II. Do I still have audio clips from my first ever show? I'm assuming you're meaning the hotline. Because the hotline was 1997. The podcasts were unique because I was taking the hotline reports and putting them online as an audio download. I would add entrance music to it. And that's why a lot of people truly think that, you know, I am, you know, arguably, you know, maybe the Guinness World Record holder of the earliest podcast online. I don't think so. There's no way I was the only lonely person back in 01, 02 that thought that, hey, you know, I could put this online. I used to call them webcasts because it was I was putting it online. And it was a simulcast of my hotline, so we would call it a webcast. But definitely the first wrestling podcast. Absolutely, I think so. But I don't have clips of my first hotline reports. They were brutal. I wouldn't want to listen to them, even if I did have the audio. I listened to my stuff from 2000 and 2001 that I still have, and I cringe at some of it. I sound robotic at times. I listen. I'm like, who is this fucking nerd? I was dry. I was drier than fucking the desert. I don't have the early ones. Do I regret not recording them? Yeah, I probably do. But when I first started, it was just strictly hobby. And, you know, I didn't think I was going to get any audience from it. But, you know, it turned into something that I never thought it would turn into. And now, 26 and a half years later, I'm still doing it, which is pretty wild to think about. But, you know, if any of you out there have checked out those early hotlines that I put online, the Blackhearts from 02, 01, 02, you know, you can hear me on them, and not very good. I still remember 2002, when XPW was going to have their first show in the Northeast, and I brought this up recently too. I interviewed Chaos, and we got into a topic. Shawn Michaels came up, and I started like talking about Shawn Michaels, and I forgot that the focus should be on XPW and Chaos. Next thing I know, call dropped. And I called him back. Oh, yeah, I'm going through a tunnel right now. And, you know, we're going to have to do this another time and everything. I'm like, oh, okay. I still have the audio, by the way. And I saw him in Philly, and we went out to eat, all of us, when they first came across. I remember we went to this diner. That's when I was talking to the late Tracy Smothers about insurance and finance. But once, you know, I started talking to him, and we were having, like, some good laughs, I'm like, did you really like go through like an underpass, like a tunnel or something? He's like, no. You went off topic. I didn't want to. He hung up. I laughed my ass off. I you know, at this stage, I could laugh at my bad shit. There was many years where, you know, like I could accept criticism, but it better be legit criticism. Otherwise, you know, I am gonna respond back. I don't fight anymore. Like, people that still, like bring up, oh, I don't tune into Don Tony anymore. I'm sick of his political stuff. I'm like, I haven't talked about politics in 3 or 4 years. Oh, yeah, blah, 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 blah. Like, I'm like, they're bringing up things from 2008. Like, those are people that don't have any reason why. They just want to, you know, whatever. So, no, I don't have 1997 stuff. And I don't remember the first time I put something online, but I know it was 2001 to 2002 because I started doing work for XPW in 02. I was doing work for ECW until they went out of business. That was around January, February of 01. Yes, I know they closed in March, but it was a little bit earlier than that. I don't remember putting ECW hotline stuff online. So it had to have been 02. Had to have been 02. Maybe 01 towards the summertime or the fall. But 02 seems like more of a realistic. But I go to Wayback Machine once in a while. And I go back to that time. And I look at my website. And I try to see if something, you know, like lights up in my head. Like, oh yeah, okay, I remember. And I can't pinpoint the exact time when it first started. So Fly, what's my opinion on Okada right now? Feels like he's lost all his mystique. Maybe it's his presentation with all the black trunks and black boots. You know, you and Mikey said similar questions. Mikey asked me, what do I think his ceiling, Okada's ceiling, would be in the United States? I think this kind of, I can answer both of you at the same time. You know, not many Japanese international stars have been able to cut it in the United States on a main event world championship consistent level. You might main event an event here and there. You might get a pay-per-view if you're lucky. But talking about somebody who remains on top, like you look at the women's side of things, Asuka might be the greatest. You know, on the men's side, though, you know, we've had from Kushida to, you know, others, you know, who had all this crazy eye, Hideo Itami, and they just, you know, just because somebody puts on their performances in Japan doesn't mean that it acclimates to the United States. Would Hulk Hogan's wrestling style in Japan, would that have gone over as much as sports entertainment in the United States? And honestly, going back at that day, I would say no. I would say no. Because Hulk Hogan's character in the United States, which that's why Hulk Hogan did not do his United States shtick in Japan. Because he knew at the end of the day he couldn't get away with it. So Okada in the United States, if he doesn't have great personality and great charisma, you can't just depend on a translator, and you can't just depend on the one-word answers like Miz TV. What did you say? What does that mean? You jackass. And that only goes so far. So I honestly don't know if Okada will ever have a ceiling in the United States where he is a heavyweight champion for any, you know, long reign, or being on top where he main events multiple pay-per-views. Could we see it in New Japan, United States? Absolutely. Could you see it in Impact? Absolutely. Could you see it in MLW? Absolutely. But when it comes to WWE, AEW, I don't see. Look at the people that they've brought in from Japan. They get like 1-2 moments and then they're done. Like nobody, even, you know, you hear about the, you know, the reuniting of that tag team with Kenny Omega. And they bring up different people from Japan that he could reunite with this person. He could be the golden lovers, golden this and that. And then you say to yourself, okay, and how long does that last? And will that person ever, we're talking about Okada. Okada's at the top. And people can't put their finger on it with Okada. I think Nakamura has done a spectacular job in the United States because he has that great charisma. I don't see Okada with that same type of charisma. So Okada, I think, is a much better wrestler than Nakamura. Nakamura doesn't need to do half the things he did in Japan, like just like Hogan. I'm not comparing Nakamura's style to Hogan, but you know, people know that they don't need, you know, less is more in the United States. So Okada, unfortunately, I don't think we're ever going to get to a point with WWE or AEW where he is the top guy in the company for any extended period of time. I just don't see it. And that's not hating on Okada, but I just don't see it. And meanwhile, the years are going by. Look at how many years people have been talking about Okada's matches, and yet United States still very, very little. Dayhawk 666. Do I think Christian will get into the WWE Hall of Fame for his singles career? Absolutely. Christian Cage is absolutely a WWE Hall of Famer. Not just because of his stuff with Edge. Christian will absolutely go into the WWE Hall of Fame. This week is the anniversary of him winning the WWE Championship for 48 hours. It's one of those days that I still remember. I still remember Twitter was around. He won the title. And I remember he lost it within 48 hours. And the net was pissed off beyond belief. And I remember him saying to everybody, like, don't worry, I'll get it back. And you were like, nah. You just felt like it wasn't. That was it. You know, like, but Christian has definitely mapped out a Hall of Fame career. Christian Cage is absolutely a WWE Hall of Famer. Do I think Miro will return to the WWE by the end of this year? Or is he going to re-sign and redeem another year's worth of checks? Well, I have actually heard that there is a strong possibility that Miro could end up on AEW their Saturday show, Collision. There is a lot of buzz that Miro will be returning and appearing in Collision. You know, the problem is that nobody is talking about is who's going to represent this champions on Collision. Let's just say Miro becomes a champion again. Is that championship only going to be defended on Collision? If it's the TNT title, is that not going to be featured on Dynamite anymore? Now, do I think Miro is just a straight-up CM Punk supporter? No, I don't. But I do also see the possibility that at some point Miro and Tony Khan just work out a deal where they buy him out for the rest of his contract. I could see that happening. I think it gets to a point where somebody gets through Tony Khan and is like, look, why are you wasting your money? Is this guy going to suddenly make us lose business if he's in WWE? If he returns as Miro or Rusev or anything else, is Rusev Day really going to harm us in any way? I think at some point, if they don't bring him back, if he's not brought back in 2023, they have to work out a release. I just can't see him fulfilling several more years just sitting at home. Miro will be back on your TV. I truthfully believe it. I think Miro on Collision is a strong, strong possibility. James Campbell, since the draft is close, since it's already happened, I'm going to tweak your question. Can I give five for Raw and five for SmackDown that aren't as obvious? Well, I'll do this instead. I will give you my favorite picks for SmackDown and favorite for Raw. The ones that catch my eye. I don't have the list in front of me. I don't need the list. I will tell you that of the draft, Gunther going to Raw is fucking awesome. And by the way, we got our wish yesterday. Yesterday, we were hoping that Samantha Irvin would get moved to Raw, and yes, she has. Samantha Irvin will continue announcing Gunther and Imperium for their matches. So she's going to be on there. We got our wish, everybody. Most of us. Gunther and Imperium going to Raw, I think, is excellent because at some point, Gunther will be World Heavyweight Champion. Absolutely. He has done a spectacular job as the Intercontinental Champion. He will be World Heavyweight Champion. So I love Gunther on Raw. I think Imperium definitely have a legitimate chance of beating Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens for one set of those titles. definitely feel that is a possibility. Because a lot of people keep saying to me, who do I think is going to dethrone Owens and Zayn? I think Imperium has a legitimate chance at that. I love that Seth Rollins remains on Raw. And, you know, Roman and the Bloodline and even Brock is a free agent. I like that Seth Rollins will end up being the cornerstone of Raw. Understand, Cody Rhodes has got to be the cornerstone in some capacity as well. And look, people still are in denial. We've been saying it since the night they announced that World Heavyweight Championship being created. Cody just did an interview and said the title he wants is Roman's. Nothing has changed. It's just that people out there just want to spark conversation. You know, people keep... It reveals to me sometimes that people don't listen or watch all of the shows. And I get it. Because I have been asked at least 7 times on Q&As since last Monday. 7 different times. You go to the chats and you'll see it. DT, do you think Cody Rhodes is going to be the first World Heavyweight Champion? I'm like, how many times do I have to say it's Seth Rollins? It's not going to be Cody. Cody is going to go after Roman. Cody's going to end up on SmackDown. Cody's going to negotiate a trade. In fact, somebody even brought up the idea of having, down the line, they negotiate a trade, and once LA Knight goes through a few people on SmackDown, whether it's in the win or the loss department, they can negotiate somewhere. LA Knight goes to Raw and Cody goes to SmackDown. I think that absolutely can happen. But Gunther and Imperium, Seth being on Raw. I like Ronda Rousey and Shayna Baszler on Raw. I know a lot of people poo-poo on Ronda Rousey, but, you know, I think on Raw, Hour 3, I think it definitely could be managed a little bit more, and it allows, you know, others to really be a better focus on SmackDown. On SmackDown, I love Grayson Waller. I love Pretty Deadly. Those were people that I had on my thumbnails, especially Grayson Waller, for the last week. He was the guy that I have said repeatedly that he is going to leapfrog Carmelo Hayes. He is going to leapfrog Bron Breakker. He is going to leapfrog everybody and go right to that main roster. And it's exactly what happened. Pretty Deadly, yes, they were written off from spring breaking, but they got it. They got it. They're going to be antagonists on SmackDown. That is going to be a hell of a lot of fun, man. I like that the Usos are remaining on SmackDown because it allows a lot of additional chapters to be created for the fallout of the Bloodline, the implosion of the Bloodline. Some people think that Jey versus Roman should be revisited. There's so many dynamics they could go. We might even get one night Roman Reigns and Solo Sikoa versus the Usos. I think that's a match you have to think about in the future. So there's 5 from each one that I am very, very happy with. Do I share the sentiment that Cody is to be champion? It feels like he has to beat Roman and not the new heavyweight title. Yes, absolutely. James, it doesn't even change at all. 1 week has gone by, 8 days to be exact. My mind has not budged in the least. Cody Rhodes, he has to be the one to beat Roman. Cody Rhodes to Roman is what Dusty Rhodes was to Ric Flair. Not even an argument. Cody Rhodes, no way, shape, or form should become World Heavyweight Champion. Not now. He's got to be the one to defeat Roman. There is no other alternative. Unless somebody gets injured, unless something abruptly changes for Roman, you know, where he has to relinquish, there's only one outcome. That's Cody Rhodes beating Roman Reigns. And it's going to happen, barring some unfortunate something. Roger Bear, any indie wrestlers that I'm surprised that are not signed to WWE or AEW? Not right now, to be honest with you, because there are so many up-and-coming stars in NXT that, you know, NXT is going to hit a lull for a little while, even though, I mean, Trick Williams, they elevated tonight. Braun is still you know, continuing his, you know, strengthening as a heel. You now we're going to have a new NXT Women's Champion, so they may have to speed up Tiffany Stratton. You know, it's possible. But as far as the indie circuit, you know, there's a couple of people in Japan that you see on these shows that you think to yourself, wow, you know, this person might be great in the United States or this person. But, you know, right now I don't think there's anybody out there where everybody and their mother is buzzing about. I mean, there are recognizable names out there. I always thought Hammerstone was going to get on one of those brands. I still think Camille should have been in WWE or AEW by now. You know, I don't know what their contracts are like, especially for Hammerstone, but I don't think there's really a need right now. I think we have so many stars. I think we got to concentrate, or the companies have to concentrate on building the stock value of a lot of people. So Braun goes to Raw or SmackDown once Braun Breaker, they feel, has it second nature, eat, sleep, shits, heel. It's not just coming out there with a pre-planned promo with bullet points. Things got to come natural. Even some of his wrestling style, even some of his reactions to moves, it's got to become second nature. Once there is room for him to feud with someone and him come in strong, when he comes in, he's going to come in strong. And it's going to happen sooner than you think. Definitely going to happen sooner than you think. So, all right, we got 1, 2, 3. Oh, I think I might have double question here. Oh, that's okay. Eric Williams, one person. Oh, wait, he's got two. Okay. One person I would want to manage in AEW. Honestly, right now, there ain't nobody. There's no, like, I wouldn't even want Luigi, like Pizza Luigi, whatever his fucking name is, Primo, Luigi Primo. Like, there's nobody. There's nobody that I fantasize that I would love to manage. You know, I always would have loved to do an Italian thing because I could base reality, you know, on it. And I still think, listen, I was going to spend the time and pull it, but I didn't waste my time, especially on social media. I know wouldn't have gotten reaction. Did you see how Alpha Academy used Italian bread to beat up Maximum Male Models in France? There's video of them using Italian bread as a weapon in the ring. And I was going to take out the clip from Deli Man hitting Vinny over the head with the Italian bread and post who did it better. You know, but I know, you know, people aren't going to, it's not worth me to put it together, put it that way. That's why I didn't do it. But, you know, I thought some of the things I did to reflect, you know, the Italian character from Howard Beach, I thought was beautiful. You know, having one part of the building eating and drinking while everybody else watches. Could you imagine if I did that in a different neighborhood? I would have been labeled like beyond racist. You know, nobody could call me out on it because the building was like 75% white. I had one section of the building eating and drinking and everybody else was watching. And people got fucking mad. You look at that crowd when they're panning the crowd and they're watching people. It was funny because my nieces, who were like 10 at the time, like we watched it back and I was like, you all were heels. You all turned heel that night. Like, what are you talking about? They're like, you're all heels. Everybody in that building wanted to kill y'all. Like, we didn't do anything. We were just sitting there eating and drinking. I'm like, yeah, exactly. I'm hugging my brother. You know, I'm giving them heroes and sodas and cannolis. We were going to do espresso, but they felt it was too much of a pain to put an espresso machine at the ringside area. But I was going to brew espresso and have everybody drinking espressos or cappuccinos. So I had some crazy thoughts back then. That's why I love indie wrestling so much, because there's where you could play it out. So, but no, there's nobody on the AEW roster right now, to be honest with you. And as far as wrestlers who really blur the lines that just make you feel that everything is real, you know, you look over the year. I mean, recently, obviously, MJF, as we were saying before, Terry Funk back in the day, you just
felt like something was off. Brian Pillman, when he became the loose cannon, you couldn't tell. I told you I met him once, and there were people in that restaurant that were like, dude, you know, I don't know about him. Something's just not right. You know, like somebody, you know, like the lights are on, but nobody's home. Like some people really thought that this guy truly like flipped his noodle, but that's how good he was. He mastered what he was doing. There's not many people who blur the lines anymore, but that's why I'll always respect when Zack Ryder went around wearing a cast, when Shawn Michaels went around with a patch on his eye. Like things like that, you know, as late as the years that they did it, that's something you never saw anymore. That's how much they cared. Moxley. Moxley wore the patch. Do anybody remember the patch in AEW? Moxley wore that patch in other promotions to sell the eye injury. Those are the people, when they're doing that, that's where they blur the lines really good. Because you say to yourself, oh, in this day and age, we know what wrestling is. That's not needed. And they still go the extra mile. And that's something that I wish was more in wrestling right now. Kevon Lewis, which company had a better roster overall? TNA 08 or AEW 2022? And one step further, which might have had the better success? I tell you, I think TNA 08 has the advantage as far as the roster goes because people would just utilize, I think, better on a more consistent basis. But as far as numbers go, revenue-wise, I think AEW did better. Their merchandise alone is great. Their profit loss on pay-per-views, I should say, is positive. Overall, it might be a different story, but I think revenue-wise, I think AEW's done better than TNA in 08. But as far as the roster goes, if I had a choice, I probably would enjoy TNA 08 a little bit more. Absolutely enjoyed his stuff, you know, their stuff a little bit more in 08. That I appreciate. TNA in 08, too bad, you know, they couldn't put it a little bit more together. But, you know, you go back at that time and you look at some of the shit they were doing. Look at the crowds. I mean, yeah, you do the stuff in Florida, the audience overall is going to be smaller. But I don't know. I kind of really thought TNA in 08. I mean, we remember the disaster with the Monday Night Wars. They brought in Hogan. They brought in, you know, some other names that people think were a big mistake. But 08 TNA, I got to tell you, I kind of preferred over 2022 AEW. If AEW utilized some wrestlers on a more consistent basis, I would say the opposite. Joe Maggi, wrestling with all my generous giveaways, what merch and memorabilia can I not part with? At this stage in the game right now, I mean, as far as non-personal stuff, that Roddy Piper shirt is just, for some reason, I feel like I'm giving away something religious. You know, and I said the only person I would probably give it to is MJF. Cross and Scarlett's first ever autographed figures in WWE, you know, those I still have. I offered them to Cross, and he said no. He's like, you enjoy it. I would, you know, I told him, you know, you want your first ever autographed. I think if his success builds in WWE and he establishes himself as a, you know, main event guy, you know, maybe he'll change on that. But for me, items I would never give away is my personal stuff. Stuff like letters, you know, all the Daphne. So, I mean, I showed some of you out there a little bit of the personal stuff. I got 3-4-page letters from her. Terry Funk, I got a 2-page letter from him. A couple of private things, you know, from some other wrestlers. Some personal moments, personal items that were given to me, you know, privately that I've never made public. Personal videos some stuff from XPW back in the day, that like home movies I wish I could show everybody. Some stuff that I still, my medulla oblongata swells at the laughter sometimes. Just watching Jerry Lynn and Danny Doring, or I think it was Chaos, doing Chop Fests in my hotel room, trying to see who, you know, gives in first. They're just chopping each other over and over and over and over and over and over and over again. And having Vic Grimes, you know, chilling on my bed, like, you know, could you send me that Beulah porn? It's just some wild stuff. But anything that's really personal, people I have made friends with over the years, some things that I've gotten for certain causes, we don't need to mention names. I have some intimate stuff, private stuff, thank yous. I never give that stuff away. I'd rather just throw it in the garbage. Would never, ever sell it. Random comment from him. He went and explored the hole. John Gotti's dumping grounds. Do I still think there's bodies in the area yet to be discovered? For my friends out there, if you ever want to entertain yourself, go on YouTube. Look up a channel called Mooney Dash Cam. Mooney is spelled the same way as Sean Mooney. It's M-O-O-N-E-Y. It's a guy from my neighborhood, and he goes to a lot of mafia locations, things that have happened over the years. And look up the hole. There's an area where John Gotti used to, and his, you know, the mob used to bury people, and they would disappear. The wild thing about it is it's less than 5 minutes from my house. I legitimately have been tempted numerous times. People have asked me, I was going to just get in my car, turn on my dash cam, and just record from sitting in front of my house and drive into the hole so you all could see what it looks like. The problem is it's not a safe neighborhood. And to this day, there's still shootings. There's drug deals gone wrong. There's a lot of bad activity there. If I were to drive by the hole, I would do it during the day, daylight, and even that, like, I would not want to stop and look around. But if you want to see that area, it's pretty wild because it's less than 5 minutes from my house. Do I still think there's bodies buried there? Yeah, I do. I absolutely do, because they did not dig up the whole area. There is a patch of area that they dug up, but there are other aspects of that area. You know, the reason why they didn't dig up some of those areas is because of the flooding. See, what a lot of you may not realize is that this area called the hole is below sea level. So there is always inches of water just sitting on the ground. It's pretty wild. If you want to amaze yourself, just go on YouTube. I mean, look, I'm sure there's been a ton of people who have recorded themselves by the hole. But there's some wild, wild stories, man. Wild stories. Devin M., should WWE bring back the Cruiserweight title or another mid-card title to add more interest to Raw and the 3 hours? I wouldn't mind the Cruiserweight championship. The problem is WWE does not like to focus titles based on weight anymore. Especially that now these days, wrestlers are, see, that's a, this is a, I got to be really careful the way I say this. I was going to say that wrestlers are smaller. Not necessarily the case. I mean, you see their roster, and you look at from Otis to Odyssey Jones to Braun Strowman and the Viking Raiders, you know, one of the Ivar, the Viking Raiders, and you go on and on and on. Bronson Reed. They might have more big boys now than they did in the past. But smaller and smaller guys are getting to main event status. And I don't think they want to, you know, like, restrict it to weight. 205 Live worked for a little while. Then you kind of felt like, okay, kind of ran its course. X Division, I still remember when they put Samoa Joe in the X Division. And everybody was making a big deal, including me, like, you know, Samoa Joe is not an X Division guy. He's too big. They had to do that to expand the roster that could fight for it. Now you don't think about it anymore. yeah, they can create maybe like a European championship. I don't know. Maybe another. I don't even know if I'm in favor for another women's championship. Like some people have said, like an IC title for women. And I don't know if that actually would be a good way to go because, you know, Bianca's doing a good job. Rhea Ripley's doing a good job. But everybody else, the problem, you know what? The more I think about it, you know why it might not be a bad idea? Because it feels right now nobody's dethroning Rhea Ripley. Rhea Ripley is going to get a chance. She's not going to go on the Gunther run, I don't think. But Rhea Ripley, she's Teflon right now. Bianca Belair, it could, it's a possibility. But look at how many women who are deserving or in the hunt for the women's championship. And Bianca is the only realistic possibility of being dethroned right now. It's one person compared to about a dozen women who could all become women's champion. So maybe another women's championship would work. And I know what some people are going to say. Well, they still got the NXT tag titles. Oh, that's temporary. That's temporary. Isla Dawn and Alba Fire. That's so they could get some extra work, as we said earlier. Three more and we're out of here, everybody. Austin Nance, any word on Tommaso Ciampa's return? No, he's doing much better than Robert Roode. Robert Roode, unfortunately, his 2023 is over. His, you know, in-ring chances of a return in 2023 is done. He ain't returning this year. A lot of people are afraid that it could be career-ending. Robert Roode does not want his career to end the way of injury like it has. That guy is in still tremendous physical condition. If anybody could return, it could. It's Robert Roode. But unfortunately, you know, the risk of crippling yourself is still there. Just like Big E. Look at Big E. Everything is healing nicely. But it's still going to be a little bit more time. You know, you can't rush it simply because people miss him. Tommaso Ciampa, he is closer to a return than he is not. But he is not yet ready for a return. AJ Styles, look, we talked about it last week. And, you know, some people, I think, still don't realize it. AJ Styles is not 100% yet. They had him do the phenomenal forearm to test out his ankle a little bit, but they're going to bring him in very, very slowly. The Viking Raiders are taking on Gallows and Anderson Friday, not AJ Styles. So AJ Styles will have a match very, very soon. But they're going to go in with kid gloves when it comes to AJ. But Ciampa, sooner than not, he should be back, unless there's some major complication that I have not heard of. Dominic McGlynn, my thoughts on Tucker Carlson parting ways with Fox News. You know, I've heard so many reasons behind it. The discrimination lawsuit filed by that woman, was it Abby Grossberg, I think her name is? The lawsuit with Dominion, they blamed it on that. This feels a lot like the Bill O'Reilly situation. I know Bill O'Reilly was accused of some things, but it just felt like at the time, I think Fox was looking for a reason to cut ties with Bill O'Reilly. I think Fox was looking for a reason to cut ties with Tucker Carlson. Their ratings have nosedived as a result. And I will reiterate what I said last Sunday. I'm not a fan of Fox News anymore. I have not watched Tucker Carlson in years. I'm just not interested. When I heard that he despised Donald Trump in his personal life but was doing the opposite on TV, gives me the same feeling like I do about politicians. I don't like fake people. And to me, he comes across as fake. I do believe he loves his country, but he comes off as fake. And honestly, I could care less if he's with Fox News or he's not. I don't watch news like I used to. I brought this up Sunday, I think it was. I have watched less than an hour of Fox News programming over the last 3-4 years. At least 3 years. Maybe an hour combined. And most of that time is only because when I go visit my parents, they may be channel surfing and they stop on Fox News to watch something. I liked him when he was doing the interview segments for Bill O'Reilly. Remember when he would go on the street, Tucker Carlson? The other guy with the dark hair, I can't remember his name right now, but the other guy with the dark hair that hosts on the Five, he used to do that for him as well. But I'm not a fan of Tucker Carlson at all, to be honest with you. And last for tonight, Tuxedo Earth with a couple of quick ones. My favorite Mr. McMahon promos of all time. I don't have any individual ones. You know, I loved when WCW went out of business. He was teasing about the Lex Express and taking shots at Jeff Jarrett, his feuds with Austin, you know, the one-liners that I do on the shows. Like, it's not like, you know, you go to CM Punk and you think of a pipe bomb. You know what I mean? Like, you look at Vince McMahon and it's more of the character, not necessarily the individual promos. When he feuded with Bischoff, when he feuded with Paul Heyman, when he feuded with Ric Flair is one of my extreme highlights, the consortium. When they were partners and Vince is grabbing his earlobe. I mean, there's so many things about the Mr. McMahon character that I could spend hours talking about. But as far as individual promos, no. Vince was a character that talked well. I mean, but it's not like he was cutting pipe bombs. You know, there's nothing really. And trust me, I thought about the Mr. McMahon character. Even some of the segments when he was being perverted with Torrie Wilson and Trish Stratus, some of his other antics with what's his face? Dawn Marie. You know, some of the other things out there. Even the stuff with Stephanie. You know, when he was part of the corporate ministry. It was me, Austin. Like, there's no promos, so to speak. Just the character itself. Do I think most commercials today are terrible and woke? Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's funny. I think a lot of you will remember this. It was about 15 years ago. Maybe even more than that. I think it's about 15 years ago where we were going to launch a website. I think it was called the Black or White and the Chinaman. I think it was something like a Black or White and the Chinaman. I don't remember exactly what the domain address was, but we were going to put out there all the commercials that for some reason there's always a black person, a white person, and an Asian person hanging out together. Like you go to somebody's house with a barbecue and there's always a black or white and an Asian. You go to, they go camping and there's always a black or white and an Asian. You see women like walking in the mountains and there's always a black or white and an Asian. Remember, we're talking 15 plus years ago, everyone. It's changed since then. I'm glad we didn't do it. Just like I'm glad we didn't do uglydivas.com. Remember we were going to launch uglydivas.com. Remember Hulk Hogan is full of shit.com? I know Jim Cornette has made a lot of money making fun of Hogan's inaccuracies over the years. We were going to do a website over 15 years ago, 2006, 17 years ago. Hulk Hogan is full of shit.com, and we didn't do it. Ugly Divas, oof. Thank God I don't have that under my resume. Because I could just imagine online somebody who's like, you know, like just wants to take a shot at me and is like, yeah, that's the guy that created uglydivas.com back in the day. Like some of the, you know, when you ever hear the phrase, some of the best decisions you do are the ones that you don't do. Like some of the best decisions are the ones you don't do. Yeah, that definitely applies for yours truly. But yeah, a lot of the commercials these days, very, very woke. I think that there's a line. Listen, when we talk about social media with AEW and WWE and the extreme fans, it's not just wrestling. You got woke and unwoke. You got crypto versus regular currency. You got government. You got police versus defund the police. It is across everything you can imagine. It's happening. So believe me, it's not just pro wrestling, everyone. A lot of commercials these days are extremely woke. Luckily, I don't watch as much TV programming like I used to, so I don't pay attention to the commercials as much as I used to. But it's pretty wild, some of the stuff going on out there. I'll save this one for last. Did I see the 24/7 special on the 2021 WrestleMania. I saw clips of it. You know, it's cool to see the behind-the-scenes stuff. And there are, listen, I want to really revisit Cody Rhodes' build to WrestleMania. Still, I almost feel like there's got to be an alternate outcome where Cody does defeat Roman. I like the behind-the-scenes stuff. I want to see the older stuff out there. Because one thing we're going to learn might not be for another year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years. One thing that we're going to learn, and we get little teasers. The Undertaker, over the last couple of years, we've gotten some hints of it. I don't think anybody understands how much footage WWE's recorded behind the scenes, period. It's almost like even in the 80s, like there was always a camera recording backstage. People training, people learning stuff, people breaking in, people who are Hall of Famers now. You see these videos like, how the fuck do they have footage of this? And it feels like they always had a camera running at all times. And I think there's years worth of content. Like if you just watched it nonstop, there's years worth of content. Now, I don't mean a camera every single moment for every single second. But when you see wrestlers working out with Vince with FUBAS pants in the 80s, and you're like, what would have even made them think to record that? It's not like they were doing best of videos and revealing the, you know, pulling back the curtain back then. There is so much footage out there that we have never seen that that's what I'm looking forward to. There is years worth of content that they have recorded that we have never, ever seen. And once in a while, you see something come out from the 90s or the 80s that has never been released before, and you say to yourself, holy shit, where did they get that footage from? And then you realize, somehow Vince thought in 88, let me have a camera. You think about the size of even camcorders at that time. It's pretty wild how much shit they got recorded that we have yet to see. It is insane. And the last question for tonight, am I sick of old school content being edited or cut out today for fake social justice reasons? Well, here's where I kind of play the center line again, Mr. Earth. It's not always fake social justice reasons. I get why some people are offended today about certain things. I think some people are too sensitive these days. You know, when you think about that racial discrimination lawsuit against WWE, when you actually start thinking about, why do you think I posted on Twitter the day of the lawsuit? As soon as I started, I asked somebody about something, and the answers I got back, everything had to do with the 24/7 title. And I posted on Twitter, I'm like, no, I'm not going to comment yet because everything that I'm hearing has to do with the 24/7 title. And I remember how bad that was. Nobody reacted to it because the only way you're going to get a reaction, you're like, fuck Vince, that racist, go to hell, hope you lose everything. And then you get 10,000 people that'll be like, yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, fuck Vince. Nah, I mean, I understand why some things these days are sensitive. I also feel some people are way overly sensitive. Some content being edited out is a little ridiculous. I think, you know, the one that stands out to me the most, that although I do look back on it as stupid, I understand why it was done. When they cut out Roddy Piper with the white and the black makeup, you know, wearing the black makeup, I remember the storyline. There was not the outrage that is perceived today. Because a lot of people felt that what Roddy Piper's message was that he represents everybody. You know, and he was pulling his inner blackness to take on Bad News Brown. Yes, it was stupid. But there was no protest. There was no outcries. There was no, you know, look at the crowd reaction. It wasn't, I mean, I get it now these days. Hell, Shit, I paid tribute to Run DMC in 1984. You know, I mean, back then people would pay tribute and they would dress up as close as they could to the person they were paying tribute. And if the person had dark skin, you know, you made your skin darker. These days, that's considered offensive, racist, and I get it. Totally get it. Some other cases of WWE editing something out because it, some people, it might be a little too uncomfortable, even some violence. You know, they edited this out a while ago. I don't know if it's still edited. Triple H and Steve Austin chair bashing Lita. That's one that nobody ever brings up. Legitimately one of the most uncomfortable segments I ever watched on WWE television. Think about that for a minute. You probably haven't thought about that segment or maybe even never heard of it before. I think this was like 2002, one or two, something like that. Triple H and Steve Austin chair bashing Lita. And I remember that night and I was uncomfortable. I thought it was way beyond over the top. We're talking 22 years ago. They edited that out for quite some time. And then it came back. And that's what surprised me. I'm like, whoa. Who thought that this was okay to put back in? I'm not saying if it should be out or should be in. But it's interesting what they pick and choose. What is not allowed and what is. Listen, I'm not a fan of Trump anymore. I don't like politics anymore. But I will say it. It's non-wrestling, but I'll say it anyway. The idea that Canada edited out the scene of Home Alone where Macaulay Culkin bumps into Donald Trump, to me, is the extreme ridiculousness. I mean, just editing that clip out because Trump offends you that much, that to me was just like, okay, all right, you don't want to watch the clip, fine, but to alter a movie because he makes a cameo, especially at that time, you know, no crimes. I just some very, very weird people these days. Again, I'm not a Trump fan. If he were to run again, I'm not voting for him. I think that time is gone. But, yeah, it's just a lot of stuff today, especially with wrestling being edited. I'm baffled sometimes at some of the things. You know what the worst part about it is? People these days, if they didn't watch it when it first happened, they'll never know it existed. That's the thing that sucks more than anything. Because once in a while with the history show, somebody will say to me, DT, I don't remember seeing this. And then I realize, oh, that person is only been a wrestling fan for a few years. Yeah, they never saw it when it first happened, and all they know is the WWE Network, now Peacock, if you're in the United States. So there are moments in history that some people don't even know ever happened because it's been edited. It is entertainment. Some entertainment sometimes will suck. Some entertainment sometimes will be offensive. You know, it's up to you if you want to tune into it or not. But to kind of like dictate it sometimes, I think is a little bit ridiculous. So, all right, everyone. So I hope you enjoyed this combo. This is the supersized. Let me know what you thought about this little collab. Like Patreon meets YouTube channel members, Q&A. And, you know, remember, if you want to be in on the fun, patreon.com/DonTony. Remember, all the shows I do, you get ad-free versions of it on the Patreon. You have about 6 or 7 years worth of Patreon shows that have never been released to the public. Guys, on Patreon, think about the thousands of hours of shows that have never been publicly available for everyone. Well, I could stop doing new shows forever and just put one or two of those on a week, and I probably got another, 7 years worth of content? So you have access to all of that. Kev Castle does a show every week, exclusive to Patreon. I do a show every week, exclusive to Patreon. No one else gives you that bang for your buck. You get 8 shows minimum a month that are Patreon exclusive, or, you know, are Patreon themed. Contests, ad-free stuff, library, thousands of hours of exclusive stuff. So if you want to go check it out, if you want to call it a little advertisement, go ahead, patreon.com/Dontone. We don't do this for free. And believe me, I got tens of thousands of dollars of debt. If I have to start charging shit just to keep things in business, then it'll be my time to exit. So believe me when I tell you, I don't underestimate. Even to this day, I still get people like, DT, why do you guys give so much on Patreon? There are people out there that do one show a month and got 1,000 subscribers. You guys do 8, not including the back catalog. And, you know, why do you? Because we're in a groove. It's like riding a bike. You get into a mode, a pattern. Everybody looks forward to Thursdays. Everybody looks forward to Tuesdays. And we add in a little bit extra on top of it. It's a lot of fun. And for my YouTube channel members, same thing. You know, you don't have to be a Patreon to get access. If Patreon gets, you know, YouTube shows, YouTube channel members should get a Patreon show. That's how I always looked at it. So, you know, some of you out there are very, very kind and generous, and you do both. When it comes to contest, hey, you get a couple extra entries, and some of you have won. I've had one person so far that actually won twice. Got the prize on YouTube and got the prize. Hey, good for you, man, seriously. But, yeah, if you want to be in on the fun, you know, sign up as a channel member on YouTube, become a Patreon, support the cause. And, yeah, going forward, you know, you will see a lot less of a social media footprint from me. I mean, there's been a lot less in the last couple of years. It's going to be even more now because I'll do my talking on the shows. Type in 320 characters to try to, like, get knock some sense into people is just not worth it. Not worth it anymore. But, yeah, next Tuesday, you know, who knows? Maybe Kevin and I will be doing a show again. You know, we got to see if there's things to talk about. Don't want to just cover basic wrestling news. We'll see. But one thing is for certain, you know, we will definitely have a show next week. But everyone be well. Much love as always. For my Patreon family, who is hanging out with me live, as always, I just type a thank you for joining me. For everybody else, I hope you enjoyed this episode, this combination. It's like Chinese food. You can get a pint of pepper steak. Who wants that? You get the combo. You get fried rice. You get an egg roll. And some places will even give you a soup or a soda on top of it. So I hope you enjoyed the combo, everyone. Don Tony, wishing you a good day. Be well.